Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, thank you all very much for letting us come here. We're very, very fortunate to be able to be in association with a group of pure devotees. You may protest. I don't know how many of you consider yourself to be pure devotees. But I would say that according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, most likely all of you apply for that, or qualify for that. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Apichet sudharacharo bhajate mamananya baksa dureva samantavya samyagi vyasito hi saha. That he speaks about durachari sadhus. Someone's a sadhu, but they're a durachari sadhu. It means their achara, their behavior is not so good. But they're a sadhu. Sadhu eva samantavya. Why? Because they're doing ananyata bhajan. What is ananyata bhajan? Some very sophisticated people will say that it means pure devotional service, one-pointed bhakti, and that's true. But Vishwanath gives another meaning. He says that ananyata bhajan means that someone's not taking shelter of karma, or of gyan, or of yoga, or of devata worship. They're only taking shelter of Krishna. They're not so perfect. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll just speak a little philosophy, just fasten your safety belts. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he calls such a person, the bhakti of such a person, he calls it Chaya Bhakti Bhas. Or a shadow-like reflection, you could say, of bhakti. It's not really bhakti. But the intention is bhakti. And therefore, Rupa Goswami, he says that anyabhilasita shunyam gyana karmadi anabritam. That this verse speaks about one's intention. The intention is for pure bhakti. Maybe I don't have that in my heart, but the intention is there for that. So we're very fortunate to be in such an association of devotees. And so many other people, they want to go and watch the cricket match or the football match or whatever else it may be. But there are very, very few people in this world who have some faith in Krishna bhakti. And we'd like to be able to speak in an according way. Mataji was here with us for the last few days. We spoke something about some of Krishna's pastimes in Braj. And we concluded, we were speaking about the Davanala Pan, or the swallowing of the forest fire. And there are two forest fires. The second one, first one indicates useless quarrel. The second one, there's a purport to it, Bhaktivinoda gives, which is to sectarianism. And we spoke something today about sectarianism and how that sectarianism spoils everything. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks a lot about this subject in different writings. I'd like to continue that a little bit and then go in another different direction. You'll see in a minute. So in the beginning of his Krishna Sanghita, he says a very interesting thing. He says that sectarianism is a natural byproduct of the absolute truth. I'll repeat that. It's a little disturbing. It's really good. It's a little disturbing. Sectarianism is a natural byproduct of the absolute truth. What do you mean by that? And then he goes on to explain in a very wonderful way that when great sages and rishis, very elevated personalities, come to give dharma, as Krishna says in 6th canto Bhagavatam, dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam, that the Lord himself gives dharma. So when that comes, it's not sectarian. Those teachers who come, who are deputed by the Lord, they come and they teach according to the time, the place, and the circumstance. And that's a very, very important principle. I remember seeing a bumper sticker in America, popular amongst a certain group of people. It said, Jesus said it, I believe it, and that settles it. So there's a certain mentality of people that they don't want to think. And we could make another sticker, perhaps. Please excuse me. Prabhupada said it, I believe it, and that settles it. Don't think about it. just do exactly what Prabhupada said. And that, of course, sounds nice, and we could support that with many points. Srila Prabhupada said over and over again, don't change things. That's your Western disease, to want to change things. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada also spoke in many places, if you do a search for the word gramophone in the folio, Prabhupada said, don't be like a gramophone that just repeats exactly what it's heard. Rather, we should learn from Srila Prabhupada, and we should apply things according to Desha Kalapatra, according to time, place, and circumstance. Because different times and different places is going to be a different need for spirituality. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda says we should not be bahirmukh janas. A bahirmukh jana is someone who's an external person, who just sees according to a fancy word Srila Bhaktisiddhanta likes to use, the lexicographical definition. Lexicographical. A lexicographer is someone who makes dictionaries. So a lexicographical definition is a dictionary definition. It's right out of the book. And I'm not thinking about anything, I just apply it like that. So Bhaktivinoda, in the beginning of Krishna Sanghita, an extremely difficult to understand book, he says that these great sages and prophets, they come all over the world throughout time, and they give dharma according to time, place, and circumstance. An example we used this morning, I think it was this morning or yesterday, was the Prophet Muhammad, who came at a certain time, in a certain place, amongst a certain group of people, and he spoke what was important at that time. And I don't know so much about Islam, please forgive me, but I've heard that one of the most important things that he taught people at that time was don't have sex with camels. That's a very important thing. Now, I don't know. I hope nobody here has that problem. I don't think anybody has a pet camel or anything at their home. So it's probably not really an issue here. And if I spoke to all of you, telling you don't have sex with camels, Prabhuji, that's really bad. Don't do that. Okay? It might not be a very valid discussion for you. And Rupa Goswami describes in Upadeshamrita that that we should speak in a confidential way, reveal our mind. Guya mukyati pritchati. We should reveal our mind in confidence. We should speak in confidence. This is communication. This is the art of communication. Different people, when you speak to them, you'll speak to them in different ways. We gave an example this morning. If you speak to a 3-year-old child, I'm very good at that. You go up to me, boop, boop, like that. They'd love that. And they start laughing. But if I go and speak to a 60-year-old university professor, and I say, boop, boop, he might not find that very amusing. So we speak according to different persons at different times. And that's an art. That's the art of being personal. And part of the problem of people changing religions or coming to a new religion is they take it in a very shallow way. Bhaktivinoda further explains in Krishna Sanghita, he says that when these prophets come, they give these teachings according to the time and place, and the people there naturally become attached to it. They give those teachings in their particular language, according to their particular social customs and things that they can relate to, that they can accept, that they can have faith in. And then those people become attached to the form of that thing in that way. And then if they see that someone else has a different kind of religion, they can't digest that. And this is sectarianism. No, no, no. We say Krishna Bhakti Prati Devi, not Vishnu Bhakti Prati Devi, or vice versa, depending on which camp you want to be in. We fall from the spiritual, or we don't fall from the spiritual. It's very, very important. And let's have a big fight about that. Because my teacher says this, your teacher says something a little different. We interpret it this way, interpret it in that way. And these things are all external differences. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says there's three different types of external differences that you'll find in religious activities. These are alochagatgata, and alochanagata, and alochagata. Alochagata is the external signs that someone wears. They have tilak, they have neck beads, they wear saffron cloth. Another place, what is it? I think it's Krishnasan, Chaitanya Sikshamrita. Yes, Bhaktivinoda describes that wearing the signs of a Vaishnav is one of the methods of cultivating devotion involving the body. But to think that is a distinguishing characteristic of a Vaishnav is a prejudice arising from sectarianism. In other words, it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing to wear the symbols of Vaishnavism. And we do this. This is a cultural practice. Every morning in most of our temples, we have a certain cultural program that we follow. What does culture mean? Culture means many different things. Culture means language. It's a very, probably the most important part of culture, language. Culture means rituals. Culture means dress. Culture means diet. Culture means music. Culture means art. Culture means many different things. So Srila Prabhupada gave a particular culture. Many times he said this is a cultural movement. And in many places in our movement, we get up and we wear certain clothes and we do certain rituals and we sing songs in certain language. And that's very attractive for the heart. But if we think that that's only bhakti, then that's a kind of sectarianism. Srila Prabhupada, as we were saying this morning, he once said that Francis of Assisi, the famous Catholic saint, he was a pukka devotee, first-class devotee. But he's not wearing tilak, I don't think. I didn't think he shaved his head and had a sikha. He wasn't wearing a dhoti or anything like that. But he was a great devotee. So we should learn to see things internally rather than externally. And this is one of the practices of bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary on the first verse of Shikshashtakam, he says that this Chaito Dharpana Marjana, Dharpana means a mirror, this mirror of the heart is very, very dirty. He gives an example, just like you have a mirror, it may be covered with grease and mud. It's so black, you can't see anything in it. Now, if you go to that mirror and you start cleaning it, it may take you a few hours. It's so dirty. After a few minutes, you might be able to see a little something in the mirror. You can't see very clearly, but you can see a little something. And Bhaktivinoda says that's our position within the mundane social spheres of vana and ashram. We can understand something about our nature, something about our position. And as we continue to clean the mirror, then we can see our real self. So someone who has a very dirty mirror, they can't understand. They see things as a bahirmukh jana. They see things in an external way because they're anartha yukta vasta. They have anarthas in their heart. And therefore their darshan, what they see is bogya darshan. They see everything for their pleasure. They want to try to enjoy everything. They want to try to enjoy religion. They want to enjoy their culture. They want to enjoy everything. We come to Krishna consciousness and we also want to enjoy. We go to Mayapur and there's 50 different pizza stands. And there's some nice rock and roll music somewhere, and we have this thing. And we want to enjoy like that. That's natural. And that's not a bad thing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who famously would sometimes have devotees who couldn't sing well, lead kirtan. But he also wrote in one article that we should have very professional presentation, very nice musical presentation of kirtan, so that people will be attracted by it. So there'll be some culture there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in another place, he describes that Mahaprabhu, in his biography of Mahaprabhu, he said that Mahaprabhu declared that party spirit and sectarianism were the true great enemies of progress. So these are our two great enemies, and I didn't explain very much these three different ways that we can see these external symbols. One is the external way someone dresses. They may wear tilak or neck beads. They may wear a tagia, a Muslim hat. They may wear a Jewish hat. They have a different type of dress. The second one is alochanagata, which are different activities that they do. And some people, they bow down to Mecca. Some people, they do sacrifices. Some people, they pinch their nose. They do gymnastics. Some people make temples, some people make mosques, some people, they dress in a certain particular way, which is also an activity, that dress. And then there's a Lochagata, which is the conception of the Lord that they have, that the Lord is personal, the Lord's impersonal, and they go and they fight about that. And this is useless quarrel. There's no reason to fight about that. As we said this morning, we gave a very challenging mental exercise, very controversial. I'll probably get kicked out for this. I hope not. But the question is, that just try to imagine this picture. What if tomorrow the whole world became Krishna conscious? How would you feel? If everybody was chanting Hare Krishna, everybody was wearing tilak, everybody was worshiping Krishna, everybody was taking prasadam, everybody stopped eating meat, they're all doing kirtan, dancing together. Wouldn't it be pretty nice? We'd probably feel very happy. Now, what if I told you it wasn't ISKCON that did that? It was some other group. How would you feel? If you don't feel happy at that point, that means there's some sectarianism. That means we're attached to some particular external thing. We gave this example once and someone said, yes, but if it happened, it would have been because of Srila Prabhupada. Yes, I agree with that. No doubt. But we're just saying, what if? We're just doing some exercise in our mind. Because when we go, when that wonderful day comes and we can go and have darshan of the Lord, when we directly have sakshat darshan, we see Krishna, who knows who's going to be with him? It's said that the Panchapandavas, when they finally went to the heavenly planets, they were very happy to go there. They saw Arjuna, saw his father Suryadev, and Yudhishthira saw his father Yamaraj, and so on. And they were very happy, we finally got here, and then they say, hey, look who's here. It's Duryodhan. He's not supposed to be here. So sometimes we may feel like that when we come before the Lord. Hey, he's not supposed to be there. That guy was really bad. We should understand the Lord has some connection with all living entities. And if we want to connect with the Lord, we have to give up our sectarianism. Now, at this point, I'd like to take you on a little bit of a journey, beginning with a philosophical, social question. I'd like to go to Jagannath Puri, and I'd like to discuss something about the pastimes of Lord Jagannath. We live in Jagannath Puri now. Question comes, is he really Jagannath? They say so. And what does Jagannath mean? Do you know what Jagannath means? Who can say? Lord of the universe. He's a Jagannatha. But is it true? They all say like that. But every time I try to go in the temple, I've been in Orissa now for 22 years, and practically I only know two words in Oriya. Three words. Bideshi Prabeshan Shade. Foreigners forbidden entrance. Because that's what they tell us every time we want to go there. So is he really Jagannath? And they have a sign outside the temple, only Hindus allowed. How is he Jagannath? He's Hindu-nath. Or maybe he's Odianath. How can you say that he's Jagannath? He's the Lord of the universe. And we feel something a little bad in our heart. Because naturally no one likes sectarianism. And if we find sectarianism in spiritual circles, it's especially very, very bad. Now, this is a delicate kind of balance, I should comment before we go into the topic about Jagannath, because we also need to have some kind of nishtha. We need to be fixed. We need to be faithful with our Gurudev and with our family. Otherwise, we can't progress. Krishna says, Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana. We should be one-pointed. And Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Swajati Asya Snigdha Sadhu Sangha Satovare. We should associate with those persons who are Swajatiya, who are the chosen people. We should associate with our family, with persons that we can relate to. That's helpful for our bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada spoke about this. Even in the early days, he told Sasvarupa Maharaj, he said, yes, it's very good. You can open up a temple for black people. And the black body devotees, they can have their own temple. And then later he'd tell Jamuna, yes, you can have a temple for the ladies, because they'll like to be by themselves. So on one hand, this may seem like a type of sectarianism. And we want to avoid sectarianism. Bhaktivinoda says, this party spirit and sectarianism are the great two enemies of progress. We don't want these two things. But at the same time, we do want to come close to our Gurudev. We gave the example this morning of a young girl who's married to her husband. Someone may say she's sectarian because she only sleeps in her husband's house. She doesn't go and sleep in other men's houses. But that's not a symptom of sectarianism. That's a symptom of love. That's a symptom of chastity. Chastity is one of the symptoms of love. So this is not sectarianism. This is love. When we have love for our Gurudev, that's manifested that we're very chaste and we stay with his Seva Sangha. But at the same time, we're mature enough that we can respect all different types of persons according to their qualification. It's a little bit of an unpalatable thing to say, but I'll say it. Sometimes I've met devotees in our movement who are chanting Hare Krishna, and they have the tilak and the neck beads and all these different signs. But just speaking with them, they're much more neophyte than some Christians I've met, or maybe some Jews or other people. It's not that our movement has the monopoly on being a Mahatma, being a broad-minded person. And to be a Mahatma is a very important quality. We also have Kanishthas in our movement. In fact, we probably have quite a few. And in fact, that might even be the glory of our movement, because we're getting so many people to join. And they join and they stay here, and they may not be so elevated. But somewhere, somebody has to begin to go a little deeper, has to begin to think a little bit more and respect different people. I'll give an example of this. It's another very shocking expose that Garuda is a non-vegetarian. That may be shocking for some of you. But according to Garuda Purana, he likes to eat snakes, he likes to eat turtles. I don't know if I'd want to go to breakfast at his house. But he's a Vaishnav. In fact, he's such a great Vaishnav. He's an associate of the Lord. He has a service of carrying the Lord. So we have to be careful to give up judging other people. Rather, we should act in a way that the Lord will want to see us, because our position is not the seer. Our position is the seen. And so this is an interesting principle to contemplate when we think about Lord Jagannath. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he first went into the Jagannath Mandir, he ran up to embrace Lord Jagannath. He fell unconscious, and the pandas were about to beat him when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came and told him, no, stop. He's a Mahatma, I can see. He has all the symptoms on his body. Take him to my home. And they took him to his house. Later, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to the temple, he never again went close to Jagannath. He would always stand next to the Garuda Stamba. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says there's both an internal and an external reason why he did that. His internal reason was because of Radha Bhav. He's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And standing next to the Garuda Stamba, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could only see Jagannath. He couldn't see Balaram and Subhadra. Srimati Radharani, she loves Krishna very much. But when Balaram comes around, or Subhadra, she becomes very, very shy. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Radha, only wanted to see Jagannath. That's an internal reason. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says is also an external reason. And that external reason was for loka siksha, or to teach the common persons the meaning of darshan. And he said that darshan doesn't mean that we see the Lord. Rather, it means that the Lord sees us by how we behave. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his dainya bhav, his mood of humility, he thought, why would the Lord want to see me? So I'll stand next to this non-vegetarian Garuda. And he's such a great devotee of the Lord. Definitely Jagannath will look at Garuda. And when he looks at Garuda, he might also see me. That's the meaning of darshan. Darshan doesn't mean that we come before the Lord Yeah, it's pretty good. I think I approve. Pujari did a good job today. Mm-hmm. And we tell everybody, yeah, the deity's wearing green today. He's wearing this, he's wearing that. That's not, we're not seeing the Lord. We're not seeing that the Lord is playing on his flute, the Trishigoni Tai, they're dancing, they're doing kirtan. On one occasion, the devotees at the Chaitanya Mutt in Mayapur were taking rest. It was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And suddenly one of them heard some screaming and shouting. And he woke up, my God, what's going on? He came running out, and he found something very disturbing. He found that his Guru Maharaj had gone mad. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had become a madman. And he was screaming and crying and shouting. And he saw this devotee, he said, there, do you see them? Do you see them? And pretty soon all the devotees are there, and he's shouting, do you see them? The devotee said, no, Guru Maharaj, we don't see anyone. They say one devotee actually saw. He said, you don't see? There's the Panchatattva. They're doing kirtan right now. You can't see that? Adyapiha chaitanya shabalila kori jakone jahari kori jisti adikari. Vrindavan Das Thakur describes in Chaitanya Bhagavat that Gauralila is going on right now, right here. For persons who are drishti adhikar, who are very fortunate, they can actually see how Krishna Leela, how Gaura Leela is going on right now. But we don't see that. So we shouldn't try to be artificial. If we consider ourselves to be the seers, we'll have a big problem in our life. We'll have a very difficult time finding good association. Because we only look for people who speak our language, who are born in our place, who come from our family. And we can't accept that someone can be a nice person, especially if they're born in an Islamic family, or they're a Christian person, or this or that. But we should not judge people by that. We should look at people by their qualities, and give up the attitude of being the seer, and let Krishna show. Let the devotees show themselves. So it's a little bit of a painful thing in Jagannath Puri, that Jagannath is considered to be the Lord of the universe, but we're not allowed to go inside and see him. I deal with this many times. We wrote an article about this a few years ago. I'd like to take you on a little journey of a few stories, if we can, about this. The first one is from a local Stala Purana, which is called the Lakshmi Purana. During the month of Magh, which is the coldest month of the year in Orissa, every Thursday, the ladies, they do Lakshmi Puja. And it's a very cultural, beautiful thing. You'll see that they take rice flour and they make a paste and they make different designs and they decorate their house in a very beautiful way. They make little footprints going into their house to invite Lakshmi Devi to come inside. Lakshmi Devi is very popular with everyone. And they clean their house and they do very nice puja. So there was one lady, one Chandalini. Her name was Shriya Chandalini. She was a very low caste person, and she was worshipping Lakshmi in such a nice way that Lakshmi Devi decided, I have to go. I have to give my ashirvad, my benediction, my darshan to this lady. Jagannath Sar, going, where are you going? I'm going to give some benediction to one of my devotees. I'll be right back. So she left the temple, and she went and gave her darshan to that lady. Meanwhile, Balaram came, and he said, hey, Jagannath, Kaliya, where's your wife? Where's Lakshmi Devi? Jagannath said, oh, she went out to give darshan to some lady. She'll be right back. So, she did what? She went outside the temple to give darshan. We don't go outside the temple, Balaram said. People come to us. And Jagannath said, well, she's a Chandalini. She can't come inside the temple. So Lakshmi had to go outside. And Balaram said, what? He said, this is very bad. He said, Jagannath, we have our rules here. We don't allow such people to come inside the temple. And if Lakshmi has gone outside the temple, Jagannath, I'm very sorry. But Lakshmi is not allowed back inside the temple. Jagannath said, ah, come on, Balaram, it's my wife. Give me a break. She just went out to give some blessings to someone. And Balaram said, no, I'm serious. She can't come back in the temple. And Jagannath said, Balaram, come on. She's just a woman. She's giving darshan to some poor person. It's okay. And Balaram told him, he said, Jagannath, this is your problem. You're too attached to women. He said, you have a choice. You can have a wife or you can have a brother. But you're not going to have both. If you let Lakshmi back inside the temple, then I'm leaving. Previously, in Treta Yuga, you were known as Maryada Purushottama, the embodiment of Vedic rules and regulations. So here in Jagannath Puri, we have very strong Maryada, very strong rules and regulations, and we can't break that. So I'm sorry, Lakshmi Devi is not allowed inside. So Jagannath, he said, well, okay, he said, but I don't think it's a good idea. Balaram said, don't worry about it. So when Lakshmi came back a few hours later, she was surprised to find the gates were closed to the temple. So she knocked on the door, and the chokidar came, and he looked really embarrassed. And Lakshmi said, open the doors, it's me. And he said, I'm really sorry, but we have rules. We have some order. You're not allowed inside. She said, don't make any joke. Let me inside. Said, no. We were told you're not allowed inside. Who said this? Well, it was your husband. I want to speak to him. So Jagannath came, and Jagannath was a little nervous, and Lakshmi Devi said, what's going on? You let me. He said, what can I do? Balaram says, you broke this rule. Now you can't come inside the temple. And Lakshmi Devi said, really? Okay. That's the way you want to do it. You're going to regret this. And Jagannath went back inside, and he went to Balaram. He said, you know, Balaram, I think maybe we made a mistake. We should let her inside. And Balaram said, no. Okay, so Lakshmi Devi, she went outside. Now, you may know around the world, not so many people worship Krishna. There's many more people who worship Shivji, or a lot of people worship Ganesh. But everybody in the world, basically, knowingly or unknowingly, worships Lakshmi Devi. She's very, very popular. And Lakshmi Devi has a lot of connections. So Lakshmi Devi, she got on her phone, and she said, hello, Nidra. Nidra is the goddess of sleep. She said, I have something I want you to do. I want you to put the two brothers in deep sleep. Okay? And then she made another phone call. She said, hello, Astavetala. Astavetala is eight ghostly creatures. She said, I want you to do something for me. You go to the temple while the two brothers are sleeping and take everything valuable out of the temple. Thank you very much. So the next morning, when Balaram and Jagannath woke up, they woke up and something felt very different and kind of hard. And the sun was coming through in their face. And they woke up and they found they were laying on top of a wooden bed. And Jagannath said, hey, but where's our nice soft bed? I don't know. Where are the pandas? Where's our breakfast? I'm hungry, Jagannath said. Balaram said, I don't know. It's so late. Jagannath said, you know, Balaram, I think this is because of Lakshmi. I told you we made a mistake. Balaram said, you worry too much. Don't. It's okay. Balaram said, look, I can cook. I'm a good cook. No problem. I'll make something this morning. So then they went to the godown, and they looked in the godown. There wasn't one grain of rice. There wasn't one tiny speck of flour. Every single thing was gone. And Jagannath was standing there. He said, I'm hungry. Balaram said, don't worry, it's okay. We're very famous, this place is Jagannath Puri. We'll go to some different people's houses and we'll beg. And so they dressed up like brahmacharis. And they went outside, and they stood outside the house of one wealthy lady, and they started reciting some prayers. Om Sahasra Sirsa Purusaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sabhumin Vishvato Vitya Achyatista Dasangulam. And the lady heard the Vedic prayers. Oh, what is the sound? She, oh, two such nice brahmacharis. She said, are you hungry? They're going to sit. Yes, very much. Well, come inside. I'll cook something for you. Balaram said, see, Kali is one of the names of Jagan. See, Kali, I told you, everything is okay. We'll have a very nice meal very soon. So they're sitting down. She gave them nice seats. And she was inside the other room cooking, and many, many nice preparations she was making. And then suddenly, Lakshmi Devi made another phone call. She said, hello, Vayu, the god of wind. I want you to do something. And suddenly, a very strange thing happened. Inside that kitchen, which was inside the house, suddenly a terrific wind started blowing. And all the foodstuffs, every grain of rice, Everything she was cooking, it all blew out the window. It was a very strange thing. She'd never seen anything like that. What is happening? She was very disturbed. She thought, it's those two brahmacharis. They're very inauspicious. So she picked up a broom and she came out and started yelling at them, get out of my house! And Balaram and Jagannath, what's wrong? Out! Out! And she started chasing them. And Balaram and Jagannath started running. She's chasing with the broom. As they were running, Jagannath, he turned to Balaram and he said, this is very bad. Even in Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda never hits me with a broom. And so the rest of the day, wherever they would go, Lakshmi Devi was making a lot of phone calls. When they would come to the door, people would just abuse them. What are you coming to me for? Get a job. Get out of here. Go away, useless people. And they were very hungry. Finally, Balaram and Jagannath, they were walking near the beach, and they saw one very poor beggar who was lying underneath a tree. And he had some problem. His stomach was very big, and he was holding it and just groaning. And as they got closer, they could hear him speaking, and he was saying, my God, what a feast. I have never eaten so much in my life. And Jagannath heard that. He said, where was this? They said, oh, you don't know? There's a very rich lady down in Chakratirtha area, part of town. That's right near where we live. And she's very, very kind lady. She feeds anyone who comes to her house. Balaram said, see, Jagannath, it's no problem. Let's go. So they started walking down the beach. Meanwhile, Lakshmi Devi, she made another phone call. Hello, Surya Dev, goddess son. I want you to turn the heat up. So suddenly it became like about 55, 60 degrees. And the sun became so hot and the sand became like an oven. And Jagannath and Balaram were walking barefoot and their feet were burning and they started running. Finally they run and they get to the house. And they came to the door of the house and they knocked on the door. And they held up their cloths. They said, Bo Mata Bhagavati Bhiksham Dehi. Please, Mother, please give us something to eat. We're very hungry. So one lady came to the door and she said, I'm just the maidservant. She said, let me go ask my mistress and I'll come back in a moment. And she came back a minute later and she said, I'm so sorry. My mistress, she looked out the window and she saw that you were both very high-class gentlemen. And my mistress has to tell you, she's a Chandalini. She's a very low-class lady. She can't cook for high-class persons like you. Balaram said, yes, that's right. We're very high class and we don't accept cooking from just anyone, but it's okay if you give us some firewood and some pots and some vegetables and rice and things, we'll cook ourselves. So she said, well, just a minute. She came back a few minutes later with rice and pots and firewood and everything. And Balaram and Jagannath were very happy. And they went and they sat down a little ways away and started cutting vegetables and things. And Balaram told him, see, everything is okay. Very soon now we'll have a very nice feast. I'm a very good cook. It's no problem. And he started lighting the fire. Meanwhile, Lakshmi Devi, she made another phone call. Hello, Agni. God of fire. No fire. Just smoke. Okay? And then another phone call. Vayu. Yeah, it's me again. Blow the smoke in their face. Thank you. So they were trying and trying and trying. And the fire wasn't lighting. Only big clouds of thick smoke were coming. And the wind was blowing in their eyes. And even Balaram's face is becoming black. Jagannath's face is becoming blacker. Tears are coming in their eyes. And Jagannath said, see, I told you we shouldn't have offended Lakshmi Devi. And Jagannath said, I'm hungry. And Balaram said, I'm hungry too. And then suddenly they smelled something. Very nice cooking. And it was coming from the house of that rich lady. They went back to the door and knocked on the door again. And again the maidservant came and said, oh, it's you two guys again. What do you want now? We're very hungry. We already talked to you about this. My mistress is a Chandalini. We don't care. We're very hungry. Just give us something to eat. Oh, well, let me ask her. She came back a minute later. My mistress said you should come inside. And they went inside and they found a a fantastically opulent house. Beautiful, very expensive Persian rugs everywhere, beautiful vases, paintings, gold and silver everywhere. And an amazing thing was so many thousands of servants, but all of them were ladies. There wasn't a single man. So they sat them down, they gave them some water to drink. They were very thirsty. And she said, my mistress will be out in a minute. She's just finishing cooking. And so a minute later, the mistress came out with a big plate of food. And the brothers saw the plate first. They were very happy. And as she got closer, they saw her face. It's Lakshmi Devi. And they both felt a little nervous. And Lakshmi Devi said, oh, it's you two. You remember me? And Jagannath and Balaram said, yeah, we remember. So Lakshmi Devi said, look, I'll feed you. But you have to promise that henceforward, anyone who comes to the temple, they should be given Jagannath Prasad. And it doesn't matter what caste they come from, what kind of birth they come from, they should be fed nicely. So Lakshmi Devi herself was locked out of the temple. It's getting a little late. I was thinking to tell another story. Should I do that or should we stop? Should we? I can stop. It's no problem.
No.
Okay. I have to tell you, we were making a magazine about this subject a few years ago, about Videshi Videshi Nishedh and how Westerners are not allowed inside the temple. And that was one of the main subjects. Another subject that came up is an event which takes place on the day that we know very well as Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. And there's a special festival inside the temple. It's called Lakshmi Narayan Vivaha. It's the wedding of Jagannath and Lakshmi Devi. A very nice ceremony. And on that day, it's very romantic. Lakshmi Devi and Jagannath are taken, and they have some yajna, and they tie a knot in their cloth. And Lakshmi and Jagannath are married. 4 days later, there's another festival called... Snanyatra. I'm sorry, it's on Snan Purnima Day. On the Purnima, there's Snanyatra, and Lord Jagannath gets a bath with about 108 pots of water from a well called the Sunakua, a special well they just use for his cooking and for his bathing. And after he gets several hundred, they say, pots of water poured over his head, Jagannath gets a little sick. You can't blame him. There's actually an internal reason for his sickness. That's a whole other discussion. I won't go in that direction now. But he becomes sick, and for 7 days, she's such a good wife, Lakshmi Devi doesn't sleep. She just stays awake, and she's serving her husband. Again, 7 days. So you can't blame her. After 7 days, she gets a little tired, and she falls asleep. As soon as his wife falls asleep, Jagannath immediately unties the knot. And he leaves the temple to go see his girlfriends. And that festival is called Rath Yatra. So Lakshmi Devi, she sleeps for a few days. She doesn't wake up. And when she finally wakes up, she's looking around. And she asks the chowkidars, the guards, where's my husband? They're a little embarrassed. They say, well, he went to see his girlfriends. And Lakshmi Devi's not very happy to hear that. She's such a nice wife. She becomes very depressed. And for several days, she refuses to take bath. And she goes and she stays in a godown. She doesn't stay on the altar. She wears a very old sari. And she only eats very plain village kind of rice for several days. Then after several days, she goes to ask some advice from a lady friend. She goes to goddess Bimala Devi inside the temple. And she goes to Bimala Devi and she says, you know, my husband did this thing. We were just married. I didn't sleep for 7 days. I was a really good wife. And I fall asleep. And the first thing he does, he unties the knot. And he leaves to go see his girlfriends. He took Subhadra with him. He could have taken me. It's not good. What should I do? And goddess Bimala Devi, she told her, she said, men are like that. Everybody knows it. Men are very bad. When a man loses his good intelligence, then you have to use some magic. And this happens every year in the temple. And goddess Bimala Devi gives her some special chana, some special powder. And a mantra, we printed that, I don't know the mantra. We printed it in our magazine. She said, you take this and you use this on your husband. So the next day, it's the fifth day. It's called Hara Panchami. Panchami means the fifth, and Hara means to see. And on that day, Lakshmi Devi takes a bath, and she puts on her best clothes, the most expensive silk sari, and all of her golden ornaments, and she dresses all of her lady friends up in very expensive silk saris and golden ornaments, and they go to see Jagannath. And they go down to the Gundicha temple, and there's a ceremony. They break part of Jagannath's temple. She's in a very bad mood. And they go inside the left door, and she goes inside. She doesn't say anything to Jagannath. She just comes in front of him. She takes his powder, and she blows it in Jagannath's face, and she leaves, and Jagannath realizes, okay, I'm in big trouble now. And she leaves, and she comes back. It's another very interesting story, how she comes back and what she does. But then Jagannath realizes he's in big trouble then. So then begins the Bahudarath, or Jagannath's return to the Jagannath temple, and he starts going back. At that time, there's a ceremony called the Lakshmi Narayan Veta, when there's some marriage counseling. The king of Puri goes to see Lakshmi Devi, and he tells her, it's okay, your husband's coming back. You see the chariot in the distance? You should come out and see him like a good wife. And they send an elephant for Lakshmi Devi to ride on to come and see Jagannath. And Lakshmi Devi says, no, I don't want it. And Jagannath comes. Finally, Lakshmi Devi comes out of the temple with her friends, without the elephant. She circumambulates Jagannath, bows her head. She doesn't say a word to him, and she goes back inside. And Jagannath realizes, I have serious problems. That night, Jagannath wears a special dress, which is called the Sunavesh. Suna in Oriya language means gold. And they say that on that day, between the three deities, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, they wear over 1 ton of solid gold. So no one seems to really understand the reason for it. But I always think the obvious reason is that he wants to pacify his wife. I've left Vrindavan. I've left those people. Now I'm coming back to you, and that's why I'm dressing up in such an opulent way. So then the next day, there's great festivities because the Lord's going back inside the temple, and everybody's blowing trumpets and beating on drums and gongs and chanting mantras and Jai Jagannath, Jai Baladev, Jai Subhadra. And Sudarshan goes in first, and Subhadra, and then Balaram goes in. And then Jagannath, Kaliya, comes down, and he starts to go inside, and everybody's cheering and everything. And then suddenly, the door slams shut in his face. And there's a voice on the other side. Probationary shade. Entrance forbidden. Lakshmi Devi is very upset. And then Jagannath has a bard. I don't know if you know the word bard. It means it's an old English word, like a singer. Someone who sings on behalf of the king. And he goes and he sings some song to Lakshmi Devi. And he says something like, Jagannath loves you very much. And he feels very bad. And he's come back and you should forgive him. And there's a voice from the other side of the door. Go away. And Jagannath tries so many different things, but nothing works. Until finally, he's let inside. And then again, they're blowing the trumpets and banging the gongs and Jai Jagannath. And he goes inside the front gate. And he goes a little further to the next gate. And the door's locked. Lakshmi Devi's very angry. And then again, there's some discussion. And Lakshmi Devi, she sends a message. She says, you tell Jagannath that he should go back to his girlfriends. You tell him that this sweet, loving wife is no longer here. Who is he going to find there, Krishna Kone? And the only person he'll find here is the goddess Chandi. Does anybody know who Chandi is? Okay, it's a little cultural point. Chandi is an expansion, is a manifestation of Durga, who in turn is an expansion of Lakshmi. Chandi is a particular feature of goddess Durga, a very, very ferocious form. In one hand, she has a big chopper. In the other hand, she has a man's head that she cut off. So Lakshmi Devi is saying, you tell Jagannath that his sweet, loving wife is no longer here. All he's going to find is Chandi with a man's head in one hand and the chopper in the other. He likes to eat nice things. He should go back to his girlfriends. They can cook nicely for him. They can give him some nice flowers and everything he likes. He's not going to find any happiness here. And then Jagannath, he sends a nice sari for Lakshmi Devi. And Lakshmi Devi says, go away. Forget it. And he sends her some jewelry and different things, and Lakshmi Devi says, forget it. Finally, they cook big giant pots of rasgullas. They do this every year. And Jagannath offers those to Lakshmi Devi. And then Lakshmi Devi finally forgives him. And Jagannath's allowed back inside the temple. And as soon as Jagannath comes back inside the temple, they have another ceremony. Jagannath's put back on the altar next to Lakshmi. And then they tie the cloth again in a knot. So this is something that goes on every year in the Jagannath temple. It's something which seems like sectarianism. It's something which is very painful to our heart when we're not allowed inside the temple and people will abuse us because you have the wrong color skin, because you have the wrong birth, you're not a Hindu, you're not allowed inside the temple. And we think it's a kind of sectarianism. And on one level, it is. And Srila Prabhupada was very upset about it. When he visited Jagannath Puri in 1977, he chastised the pandits. We also printed Prabhupada's words in that magazine. But Prabhupada also privately told Harisari Prabhu and some other devotees, don't fight with them. You should be humble, like Rupan Sanatana Goswami, like Haridas Thakur. They never demanded to go inside the temple. When people ask me about it, I tell them, don't be angry with the pandas. It's not their fault. You should be angry with Jagannath. It's Jagannath who's doing that. And in the Jagannath Ashtakam, it's described, Aho dine nate nahita charano nishchitam idam Jagannatha swami nayana patagami bhavatume Aho dine nate nahita charano nishchitam idam. The Jagannath gives his lotus feet to those persons who feel themselves very low and fallen and who are always crying, Jagannatha swami nayana patagami bhavatume. Sometimes the pandas, they've told us there, they say, Madhavananda, you're very unfortunate. And I say, why? They say, because you can't go inside the temple and see Jagannath. And I say, I don't have to go inside the temple. I stay outside. And he comes outside to see me. That's called Rath Yatra. It happens every year. I don't have to go inside. And then I ask them, you're a pandit. You know Shastra. Please tell me. Who did Krishna give more mercy to? The Brijbasis or the Dwarkabasis? What do you think? Who? The Brijbasis. That's what they told me also. I told them it's a lie. How can you say that? How can you say Krishna gave more mercy to the Brijbasis and the Dwarkabasis? It's not true. He left them. And every day, maybe three or four times a day, the residents of Dwarka could see Krishna. They got more mercy, isn't it? No. Actually, you're right. Krishna gave more mercy to the Brijbasis. But apparently, it looked like a kind of suffering. And Krishna does that sometimes to his devotees. Sometimes Krishna causes some terrible suffering. We were discussing about the forest fire and how Srila Jiva Goswami, he's described a very shocking thing, that who actually lit the forest fire in Sankalpa Kalpa Turu. He says, Yes tada dahanam goshta premna krishta vivechanaha premna stasya parikshartam eva dragapi bat prabhu. He says a very shocking thing. The forest fire was lit by Krishna. Krishna did it for prema parikshit, to test the love of the Brijbasis, to illustrate their love. Sometimes Krishna does that. Sometimes Krishna seems like he's sectarian, like Jagannath, and he doesn't allow the Western devotees inside, and we feel very bad because I can't really get the mercy. But what really is a mercy? Is a mercy just being allowed to come and stand in front of the deity? Or is the mercy that Krishna makes us cry? Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu at the Dainyam. He says at Trasa, What is it? Nice verse. At the dainyam duka trasa parada vyara norjitam dudinita. He says there's three things which cause humility. Duk, unhappiness. Because I can't see the Lord. It causes great humility. It causes great unhappiness. It causes humility. Trasa, some fear. Maybe I did something wrong. Maybe I've done some offense, and that's why I can't see the Lord. This is also cause for humility. An aparad, we do some offense. Those things are not necessarily bad things. For a devotee, those may be good things. Krishna may arrange them to help that devotee to become humble. And if we have that kind of humility, then Krishna will appear before us. Aho dene nati nihita charano nishchita midam jagannatha swami nayana patagami bhavatume. And therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, he taught us, he prayed, adarshanam amatam karotuva. Whether you give me darshan or not, mat prananatas tusa evanapra. You're my Lord of my life. No one else is my Lord. So we should be a little deep. We should be a little bit thoughtful and not fall prey ourselves to sectarianism. And if we find ourselves personally in a situation where it seems like we're being abused, especially that abuse comes from the Lord's devotees or even the Lord himself, then we should think deeply about it. We should realize this is some manifestation of the Lord, and I shouldn't hate this devotee. I shouldn't be angry with the Lord. Rather, if the Lord wants to abuse me, then let me wear his abuse as an ornament on my head. Very good. Yes. So we'll stop there. Shri Jagannath Swami ki. Shri Shri Gonityananda Prabhu ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari. So did anybody have any feedback, any thoughts about this? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke about this principle many times. He said there are two things, drashta and drishta. Drashta means the seer, and drishta means the seen. This is our constitutional position. Our position is to be seen. But we don't want to accept that due to pride. And as Bhakti Viganmar said very nicely a couple days ago, the worst type of pride is pride in religion. That I have, especially we find this in people who just newly come to a new religion, they become very proud. My religion is the best religion, it's better than everybody else's thing that they're doing. That pride, by that pride, we can't approach Krishna. So this pride is a pride that we're thinking that I'm Krishna, that I'm the seer, because Krishna is the seer. I'm not the seer. And we can be very, very peaceful if we accept this principle. I'm not the seer. Rather, I should behave in such a way that the Lord will see me. I can't tell who's who and what's what. I'm not the judge. That's not my position. I wrote an article recently on Dandavats called Forgiveness and Fault Finding. And we spoke some principles about this. How in this world, we'll find two different courts. There's the court of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, he has his lieutenant, is Chitragupta. And Chitragupta, he's always keeping a record of all the sinful activities that everyone does. He writes down every little thing everybody does. So we can serve in that court. Or we can serve in the court of Lord Nityananda. And there's a nice song in that regard. I'll just sing a line or two of them. You can chant Hare Krishna response. Thank you. He sings that Lord Nityananda, he's adosha darshi. He doesn't see anyone's fault. And therefore, he's more a Prabhu. He's my Prabhu. Why? Because I have so many faults. So I want to work for him. And Lord Nityananda has another court. He's the judge in that court. In one court, Yamaraj is the judge. In another court, it's Lord Nityananda. And we have to make a life's choice. Which court do we want to work for? In the Narada Purana, there's a nice verse. Papinam papagananam yakaroti naradamaha astitve tuya papi sham nityatve tuigunam baret. First Canto, chapter 14, text 161. That there's certain people, interesting word used, papagananam. The word papagananam literally means someone who counts the sins of others. There's people like that. You ever met someone like that? They go around, they make notes about everybody's little fault. That papinam, that person, is a very low person. Ya karoti naradama. Astitve tulya papi shan. If the faults they find in someone else are true, then they get to share equally in that fault that they perceive. But nityatve dugunambaret. If the fault is not true, if it's a lie, then they get twice the reaction. So we should be careful. We all have to work for one of these two courts. But we should be careful because we'll also be judged by the court that we want to work for. And if we want to work for Lord Nityananda, we have to become adosha darshi. And therefore Srila Prabhupada, in one purport in Madhyalila, he says that the qualification of a devotee is that he's adosha darshi. He doesn't see fault in others. So we have no qualification to see other people's faults. That's not our business. If you're a parent, then you have to find fault with your children. If you're a temple president or a GBC, if you're a guru, that's your job. You have to do that. But if we're not, we don't have one of those posts, then we don't have to worry about finding everyone else's fault. We can just worry about ourselves. And as my Guru Maharaj once told us, you should find all the faults in yourself. Don't see any faults in others, but find all the faults in yourself. And if we do this, it's a very, very good exercise. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in different places in his writings, it's a long discussion I won't get into, but just a touch on the principle, he's given ways by which we can find good qualities in others. He said we should always look for other people's good qualities. It's a kind of exercise we can do. Whenever we meet someone, we should look and see, wow, this person, the guy looks really uptight. He's got a suit and tie. He has no time to stop for a book. Looks really angry. But I can tell the guy must be really very timely. And looks like he's really together materially. A lot better than me. Mm-hmm. But this person dresses better than I do. This person obviously is more intelligent. We can look in so many different ways. If we think we can find something in every person, we can find some quality that makes them better than us. If we look hard. Even in some demon we can find. There's a short story. Once one person retired from family life in West Bengal and he moved to Radhakund. And he started chanting every day. He was chanting 3 lakhs a day. And he went to one sadhu, Maharaj, please give me initiation. But that sadhu saw that this person, although he's chanting 3 lakhs a day, he's actually not qualified because he's proud. He was born in a very aristocratic family. He had a very big education. And he thought he was a really big person. Maharaj, you'll be lucky if you take me as a disciple. I know 5 verses in Bhagavad Gita. And I come from a very wealthy family. I'm very handsome and I'm also very humble. We sometimes think like that. So this sadhu saw he's not qualified. No, no. But he kept coming back, please, Maharaj. And finally the sadhu told him, okay, look, I'll give you initiation. If you come back to me in 1 week and you bring one creature, one living entity, one person who's actually lower than you in every respect, if you can do that, then I'll give you initiation. The man said, yes. Easy. No problem. I come from such a high family. First thing he saw was a rickshaw wall. He said, that guy, man, I'm a lot better than him. But then he thought, wait a minute. Actually, he's born in Radhakund. And he's serving all the Dambasis and people. Actually, he's better than me. in some ways.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a street sweeper. Uh-huh. He's cleaning some stool in the street. I would never touch that. This fellow's definitely lower than me. But then he thought again for a moment, no, actually, every day this street sweeper, he's serving the dust of Radha Kund, and he's covered with it. He's actually more exalted than me. So that actually, this is going to be a little harder than I thought. And he spent the whole next week trying to find some person or some living entity which was actually in every way lower than him. And he failed. He couldn't find anyone. And finally the last day came. And that morning he went to do his morning business in the field. He was passing stool. As he was doing his business, he saw something a little disgusting, excuse me. He saw a worm crawl into his stool and start eating it. He thought, that's him. He's definitely lower than me in every way. But then he thought, wait a minute. What is this stool? I eat nice Krishna prasadam. And what happens after I eat it? It turns into this disgusting thing here. Mm-hmm. And this worm, what does he do? He eats that stool and he turns it into very useful earth. He purifies it. Actually, he's better than me also. So then he went back to the sadhu and he said, Maharaj, I'm sorry. I wanted to be initiated, but I failed. I couldn't find anyone lower than me. And the sadhu said, now I'll give you initiation. Now you're qualified. So we have to give up that pride of thinking that we're the seer of other people. We're the judge of other persons. Is that okay? Okay. Anything else is there? Just any reflection?
Contrary, in the Arunam Chintamani, Bhagavad Gita Kuru said that someone who is marrying and is trying to be married in the Khan, he should make discrimination between Vaishnava, otherwise he will get
In chapter 8 of Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda speaks about Majjhima Adhikari and Kanishtha and Uttam. And he makes a point there even stronger. He says that if a Majjhim doesn't act according to these principles, then he'll fall down. Mm-hmm. And he quotes 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, Ishvare Taradineshu Baliseshu Dusatsucha Prema Maitri Kipopiksha Yakuroti Samadhyamaha. So this is a Majjhima Adhikari. Majjhima Adhikari, he has to distinguish. And Bhaktivinoda in Jiva Dharma, chapter 8, great chapter. We've been listening to a recording of that every day for the last few weeks. Such a nice chapter. He says that the Kanishtha Adhikari can't see a devotee. He can't recognize it. So he pretty much treats everybody like they're trash, like they're lower than him. So he's equal in that sense. The Uttama Adhikari also doesn't distinguish. He sees that everybody's better than him. So in that sense, the Kanishtha and the Uttama are very similar. Only the Majjhim distinguishes. And the Majjhima Adhikari has to distinguish. Otherwise, he'll fall prey to having bad association. He may fall down. So Bhaktivinoda Bhagavatam says he has to distinguish in four ways. Ishvare, Tadadineshu, Ishvare of the Lord. He has prema. He has love. And Bhaktivinoda defines that love, that prema. You may say, well, prema, he's a Majjhima Adhikari. I thought prema was for Krishna, prema was for someone very, very advanced. He defines that prema as anyabhilashita shunyam gana karmadi anabritam. It means the intention. It means a pure intention of prema. It doesn't mean they're on the platform of prema. But they have prema like this for Ishwara. Adineshu, they have some friendship for the devotees. Balishu, for persons who are innocent, they give some kripa, some mercy. And Bhaktivinoda says, according to the degree of their innocence, they're an ignorant person, they don't know about this or that, but to the degree that they're innocent, you can give them some mercy. If they're very innocent, you give them a lot. If they're not so innocent, you give them a little. And the fourth category is someone who's dvisatsu, which means envious. And that person we have to practice upeksha, or neglect with. And Bhaktivinoda also gives an elaborate description of that, which is very interesting, very important for devotees who want to be Majjhim. He says that it doesn't mean that you're going to give up your social connections. It doesn't mean you're going to go to work and tell your boss, I'm not going to look at you because you're envious. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to see the face of this person because they're a meat eater. He says sometimes you have people in your own family Bhaktivinoda says, who may be envious, you still have to keep them in your family. He says, even someone may be hungry, they may be cold, you may give them some food. You may give them a place to stay. They may be an envious person, but you do that. So then what does neglect mean? He says neglect means that you don't speak about Krishna with persons if you see they're just going to want to argue with you and debate with you. So that's a very, very important principle. But again, the point comes, which I think is what you're making, we're speaking about how we're not the seer. So if we're not the seer, then how is it that we're supposed to distinguish these four different distinguishing? So let's contemplate that a little bit. How do you know someone's really a devotee of the Lord? During the Vietnam War, the FBI sent a spy to Hawaii, dressed up like a, acted like he was a normal person at the Sunday feast program, said, yeah, I want to join him. What do I do? And he joined the Bhakti program. And he started wearing Kunti Mala and Tilak and things. He was a spy. During, in 20, 30 years ago in Russia, there were a number of people who were coming to the Hare Krishna movement who were sent by the KGB in a similar way. And I heard that some of them later, they came to Naranja Maharaj and said, Guru Maharaj, there's something I have to tell you. I had another job before I came to the devotees. I was a spy. So how do you really know they're a devotee of the Lord? You really don't, in one sense, because we're not the seer. How do you really know what is the Lord? Well, I don't know. Jiva Goswami calls this arop siddha bhakti, that we project something. We think that the Lord is like this, and so we project he's a burning bush, or he's a voice from the sky, or he has to be big, or he's this or that. We project something material onto the Lord. We don't really know. How do we know someone's really innocent? How do we know someone's really envious? Maybe they're just putting on a show. We really don't have a choice. It's not that we have to sit down every time and really think about it and have an interview with them. Well, are you really envious? Or did you punch me in the face just because you wanted to purify me? Or what was your reason? We don't have to be so complicated. We have no choice. We have to follow our heart. Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sundarbha, he quotes a verse from Brahma Vivarta Purana, which states that why is it that some people are attracted to bogus philosophy, bogus literature, and bogus sadhus? And the answer is because of anartas in the heart. You're not attracted. Some people weren't attracted by Srila Prabhupada. Some people were attracted by other bogus people who were doing sex with little children and all kinds of terrible things. Why were they attracted there? Because they had these anartas in their heart. So we can't see. We have to do one thing then. We have to chant and take shelter of the Lord and pray to Him, and He'll give us vision. He can reveal to us who's who and what's what. And He'll whisper in our heart. And if we're sincere, He'll reveal to us. This person seems really angry. And it seems like they're really criticizing everybody. But I don't know. There's something else about them. Maybe that person is Gorky Shordas Babaji. They look like an angry person externally. But if we're sincere, maybe the Lord will whisper something in our heart. And we'll have some other kind of realization. So we have to depend on the Lord. And we can't really see. But at the same time, we have no choice. We have to follow our heart. And sometimes our heart may guide us in the wrong way. So especially in the beginning stage, we should be ready to change our direction sometimes and not be so attached. So I think we're going a little late. Sorry. Anything else to say? Okay, should we stop there? Yes. Have, okay.
Can I thank you very much?
Thank you for
watching.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Premanandi Yajani, Vanshakopa Guru Vishcha, Kupasanda Beva Chandra, Kupanam Pavani Vaishnava.